475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Congress, in its wisdom, has prohibited pirate operators, that is, people who operate without licenses, from ever owning a low-power station. On the other hand, that same pirate could own, for example, WCBS-TV in New York City.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that Columbia County elected officials, police, social workers, and mental health professionals are working on plans to build the wellness hub to alleviate homelessness, drug addiction, and mental illness. The plan comes out of a 2021 report commissioned by Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson, and I quote, intended to reduce policing of people in mental health or substance use disorder, SUD, related crisis, end quote. The hub would include a, and I quote, safe haven, end quote, style shelter, therapy, peer counseling, and social services intended to keep county residents in crisis out of the court system and the emergency room. Currently, homeless people in the county are often moved in the Catskill High School Library. The proposed budget is 2.7% or $1,312,669 larger than this year's budget. Catskill Schools Public Information Specialist Adam Charbonneau said that the budget does not include any cuts to any student programs. The story lists changes in the budget from last year but does not indicate which are additions and which are cuts. Deborah Johnson, Ryan Oswald,
We stand for the truth of what is at the heart of the American people.
Harry Belafonte died this week at the age of 96. Throughout his life, he fought for justice, using his celebrity to support causes from civil rights to anti-colonialist and anti-war movements and Black Lives Matter. Belafonte continued in that 2003 speech delivered to several hundred thousand anti-war marchers in New York.
We were misled by those who created the falseness of the Bay of Tonkin, which falsely led us into a war with Vietnam, a war that we could not and did not win. We lied to the American people about Grenada and what was going on in that tiny island. We've lied to the American people about Nicaragua, El Salvador, Cuba, and many places in the world. And we stand here today to let those people and others know that America is a vast and diverse country, and we are part of the greater truth of what makes our nation. Dr. King once said that if mankind does not put an end to war, war will put an end to mankind.
Harry Belafonte was one of Martin Luther King Jr.'s closest advisors and confidants. He first met King in 1956 during the Montgomery bus boycott. Their initial meeting by Andrew Young, an advisor who would later become the mayor of Atlanta and the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Belafonte recounted King's reply. He wrote, "The trouble," Martin went on, "is that we live in a failed system. Capitalism does not permit an even flow of economic resources. With this system, a small, privileged few are rich beyond conscience, and almost all others are doomed to be poor at some level. That's the way the system works. And since we know that the system will not change the rules, we're going to have to change the system," King said. Dr. King frequently spoke out against capitalism, but this private moment shared by Harry Belafonte shows the depth of his critique. Belafonte went on, "At heart, Martin was a socialist and a revolutionary thinker." One week later, King was dead, shot while standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel. Harry Belafonte never relented. He intensified his fight against South African apartheid and the ravages of U.S. imperialism abroad. He challenged those in power regardless of political party, from George W. Bush to Barack Obama, from Donald Trump to Joe Biden. In 2006, as President George W. Bush's disastrous war in Iraq was still raging, Belafonte traveled to Venezuela and spoke at a mass rally standing alongside President Hugo Chavez.
"I want the greatest tyrant in the world, the greatest terrorist in the world, George W. Bush says, we're here to tell you, not hundreds, not thousands, but millions of the American people. Millions support your revolution, support your ideas, and we are expressing our solidarity with you."
Not long after, Harry Belafonte was disinvited from speaking at the funeral of his dear friend Coretta Scott King, as President Bush was going to attend. Belafonte often told the story of his mentor, the singer and activist Paul Robeson, who told him, "Get them to sing your song and they will want to know you." As Harry Belafonte is laid to rest, his message still sings out, "We cannot rest." I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
I took a trip on a sailing ship, and when I reached Jamaica, I made a stop. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way. Won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston Town.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts rain on Sunday. There's an 80% chance with a high of 56 and an east wind 7 to 11 miles per hour. More rain on Sunday night too, 100% chance with a low around 45. Then on Monday, there's a 50% chance of showers, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 56 and a low around 40. Tuesday, showers are likely again, possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. with a high of 50 and a low around 39. This is the WGXC weather at WGXC.org. Next, we're going to hear from the Master Gardeners at the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They have a podcast called Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. And each week on WGXC, we'll hear different segments from the show focused on local gardening and gardening for the time of year it is.
Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are Master Gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature, or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Jean Thomas.
And welcome to another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Hey, today we're going to go on a virtual tour, Jean.
Berkshire Botanical Garden.
Yeah, Berkshire Botanical Garden. And Linda Levitt is a wonderful master gardener who works with us, and she's been a tour guide there for many years, so she's going to take us on a virtual tour. She's going to talk about the history and how it became, but it's like an amazing place in terms of the different plant varieties. There's 3,000 different species of plants and 24 acres of gardens. Have you ever been there?
I've been there frequently.
It's a really good place to go. It's a really good place to get ideas for your own garden and just see, you know, there's always something in bloom there. It's a beautiful place.
It's different every season, and bring a notebook.
And I don't know if you've ever taken any, but they have great classes there too.
No, I haven't. I know you have.
Yeah, it's a really good place to take classes, and they have a lot of special events during the year. In fact, they have something coming up that I know you're going to probably go to. Maybe we'll go together, the annual plant sale.
Well, that's a tricky thing. You got to get there really, really early.
You do
early.
Have to get there early, but I'll pick you up early, Jane.
We'll go. Okay, I'll be ready.
Excellent. And Dee Dee and Jackie are back.
They're back. I love Dee Dee and Jackie.
The Dee Dee and Jackie show with Pests and Pathogens. They're talking about spongy moths.
Oh!
Spongy moths. It's the new common name for something we used to call gypsy moth. Spongy moths are super destructive. They're non-native, and they've came here in the 1800s, and they can defoliate trees very, very quickly.
You can hear them chewing.
One of their host plants is the oak, and they can defoliate oaks very, very quickly. If you have several infestations, it can actually kill the tree. So it's really important to be able to identify them and know how to deal with them. Our other feature today is Joan Satterley from Tools of the Trade. And what is she going to talk about
today? She is going to talk about Durr's Woody Plant Manual.
That is a great resource. Do you use that?
I adore it. I got mine back in college, which was in around the turn of some
century. So it's a stone tablet, is it?
It is. Yeah. It is. You got to dust it off every so often, or the letters all fill up.
And he comes out with new editions every once in a while. But it's really the essential resource for trees and shrubs.
And the best thing about it, he's opinionated.
I love that he has an opinion. Yeah, he'll say very cutting things about plants in terms of their landscape value and things.
A little dislike for some of them.
Yeah, but, I mean, it includes all the information you need, cultural information and different cultivars and things like that. And then he'll zap that plant and say, this has not got much landscape value. And I just planted two of them.
I read through sometimes for giggles.
Yeah, but it's a really good resource to have if you're at the nursery center and you're trying to decide between a couple of different trees and shrubs. And it's a big investment, trees and shrubs. So I think that's going to be really interesting to hear what Joan says about that resource.
I think so. I love it.
Excellent. I can't wait to listen.
Well, let's go do it.
Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Jean Toss.
We're talking today to Master Gardener Volunteer Linda Levitt. We know Linda has a love of flowers because she's with us on a regular basis doing Flower Power. Today, Linda is here to talk to us about the fabulous Berkshire Botanical Garden in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Linda has been a tour guide there for 6 years and is, we hope, going to take us on a virtual tour there. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Tim.
So what made you want to be a tour guide?
Well, about 8 years ago, I became a master gardener volunteer, and I wanted to do something that I could share my knowledge with other people. So I added to my knowledge by taking courses at the Berkshire Botanical Garden in their horticulture certification program. And since that time, I have become certified as landscape design and horticulture. So I enjoy meeting people a lot, and I have for years enjoyed public speaking. I also have found that when I meet people at the garden, I'm not only teaching them some things that I have, but also I'm learning from them.
Okay, so let's get started. We'll go on our virtual tour. Your group is assembled. Tell us who comes to the garden. Are these experienced gardeners or just people that want to smell the flowers?
Each tour is so different. I've done tours for as small as 2 people, and I have done as large as 40 people. The tours are offered from June 1st to September 1st. They are 11 o'clock every day, and they last about 45 minutes. And what's interesting is no matter what tour you're doing, everybody is so different. We get people from all over the world, and the questions are so different. And at first, when I first started to do this, I sort of panicked because people would say, well, I'm from Texas and I'm from California. And I immediately froze and thought to myself, well, how am I going to answer their questions or what kind of questions will they ask me? And it was kind of interesting that I was able to do it, but I did learn a lot from them.
I know the garden has a rich history. Can you tell us a little bit about how it was established?
Sure. The land for the gardens was donated by a local businessman by the name of Bernard Hoffman in 1934. At that time, it was a total of 15 acres located on both sides of the main road in Stockbridge, which today is now Route 102. He married a woman by the name of Irene, who was from Chicago. And so what Irene did in conjunction with the Lenox Garden Club established what is now the Berkshire Botanical Garden. But interestingly enough, for 20 years, it was called the Berkshire Garden Center. When we think of garden centers, we think of a retail space. And so that lasted for about 20 years. And then it was changed to the Berkshire Botanical Garden. At the time, it was one of the only botanical gardens in the Berkshires and one of the oldest actually in the United States. It was, and still is, dedicated to educating adults and children about gardening and the environment. They began with 503 members, and the dues were 50 cents. They realized very quickly that they needed to raise more money. So they began a harvest festival in 1935, which to this day is still their major event for the year, usually around mid-October.
Oh, I've been to that. That's magic. It's wonderful. It's huge.
It is.
It's the whole grounds. Okay, what about the garden today? Give us an overview on like how big is it and how many species of plants there are.
Well, let's fast forward to today. It's a lot different. The focus is what will grow in the Berkshires. In 2020, the Berkshire Botanical Garden expanded to over 24 acres, still on both sides of the roads. And even with COVID, they had 120,000 visitors. And there will be another probably 10 to 12,000 visitors the weekend of the Harvest Festival. So now there are 1,200 membership. There are 15 year-round staff members, 7 seasonal, and 4 interns during the summer months, and about 450 registered volunteers like myself. There are 28 distinct display gardens and over 3,000 species of plants. And the garden is open for viewing from May 1st until mid-October.
Wow, so with 28 different gardens, how do you get started? How do you even begin to approach the beginning of the tour?
I usually start by asking people what their level of gardening experience is, where they're from, do they have any issues or things like that. And that kind of gives me an idea of where I want to go and how I want to do things. So that's when I usually hear about deer problems or things like that that are specific to maybe the Northeast. I will spend more time on the gardens that are in bloom, and that can vary every week. So initially, on the side of the road of the gift shop, there are a number of things. There's raised vegetable garden beds, which are, most people would say, well, raised vegetable garden beds. But these are really unique because they are hybrid varieties of vegetables. And there are 60 raised beds, and there are 2 of each of the plants that they're going to grow. They grow on one side and then on the other, just so they can see how they're going to grow into the Berkshires. And sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not. So that's a really interesting type of vegetable garden. There's a Fitzpatrick greenhouse, which offers viewing of flowers from the Southwest and tropical flowers. Really lovely part of that part of the garden is the children's garden, which is got a playhouse on it and a wishing tree so that the kids can leave a wish for what they're asking for. It's kind of really very pretty. And by the end of the year, the tree is full of different wishes hanging from the tree. It's absolutely fantastic. Of most interest, I think, on that side is the solar greenhouse, which was built in the late 1970s. And that houses 55 50-gallon jugs that are heated up during the day with the sun. And at night, they release the heat. So it's used in the wintertime with a backup kerosene heater if it falls below 32 degrees.
Okay, I've got a quick question. What zone is the garden?
The zone is a 5B.
Oh, good. That's the same as us. What if I'm visiting and I'm only interested in one thing, like perennials or dry weather kind of plants? Can you tailor a tour to something like that?
I can. And if you cross the road from the gift shop, what you're going to see is you're initially on the left-hand side, you're going to notice a beautiful perennial garden that is modeled after an English cottage garden. And the colors are very pastel-like. They're pale blues, they're pale pinks, and so on. And it's very, very beautiful. It's called the Beatrice Sterling Proctor Garden. And that's on the left-hand side. If you cross over the driveway, and there are 2 very large perennial gardens called the de Gerstorff Gardens. And these gardens are separated by a large oval of grass. And on one side are the sunny side, where they have all those plants that will do well in the sunshine. On the opposite side is all the shade-loving plants. As a matter of fact, my husband and I were married on that oval between the 2 gardens.
That's so cool.
We're talking today about criminal justice reform at the state capitol, and we're joined by Nick Encalada Malinowski with Vocal New York, and they have a pretty full agenda. So, Nick, maybe you just start off giving us a brief overview of what is Vocal New York for the listeners, and then, you know, what are some of your key priorities this year in terms of criminal justice reform?
Sure. Thanks, Mark. Vocal New York is we're a statewide membership-based organization working to end mass incarceration, end the war on drugs, and the epidemic of HIV and AIDS and homelessness in New York State and around the country. And we do this through really organizing and mobilizing with people who are directly impacted by those issues. Again, across the state, we have bases in New York City, Capital Region, Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse. I work, as you kind of previewed a little bit, mostly on our mass incarceration work. And going into 2023, we really had five main legislative priorities that sort of span the gamut of the criminal legal system. So we are working on elder parole and fair and timely parole, ending qualified immunity, challenging wrongful conviction act, and Daniel's Law, which would change the way that the state responds to people in a mental health crisis, specifically removing the police from that response.
Now, we're actually talking on Thursday, April 27th. Still have not put that state budget to rest, and some of these issues are